Hello, and welcome to We Are The University, a podcast about the people who make Cambridge unique. I'm your host, Nick Saffel. In this episode, we meet James Biddle, the headmaster of the University of Cambridge Primary School. We talked about the school's character and vision, how learning should always be joyful, how a trip to Nepal helped him realise that he wanted to become a teacher, and we also find out how he inspires the team of teachers around him.
A head teacher is not just one person, it's a kind of the amalgamation of all the people that have that I've interacted with, and the same with any human being. So, you know, although, you know, there's a success in leading the school, that success is a shared one. It's the people who've guided and nudged me and pushed me in the directions that sometimes felt uncomfortable and didn't want to go. But, you know, and there are many people I could talk about, you know, Angela Tapscott, Pam Bernard, Alison Peacock. My own team at the moment, my leadership team at the moment, are kind of inspiring people to work with because they are very reflective and go out of their way to make it work. But I suppose, you know, people like my grandmother, she was Greek, and she came from a small island in Greece. And when she was 10, she was, you know, there was too many children in the family. She had to go and live with her sister in Egypt.
Right.
So, you know, for a young 10-year-old to leave on that donkey to go to the place of the pharaohs, and to live, you know, a different life there during the war,
yeah.
And then met my grandfather who's English. They came here, then they lived in Zimbabwe. So that her story of migration, her story of poverty, of kind of the diversity that she experienced, really has kind of, it's part of my kind of my habitus as James, as well as the head teacher.
Yep.
So my real interest in inclusion and diversities and kind of understanding that everyone comes with their own joy and suffering,
yeah.
And how do we kind of respond in a compassionate way that is kind of trying to build community rather than separate. So she would be kind of inspiring, one of my five.
We haven't really talked about why you became a teacher. Where did that idea come from?
Well, I never wanted to be a teacher. I was always told that you're very good working with children. At any family events, I was always looking after the younger cousins. So I always resisted the idea that I was just going to be a teacher, as if it was a kind of a second-class job.
There's that just word, isn't it?
Yeah. Just a teacher.
Where do you think that comes from?
I think the Chartered College of Teaching, this new professional body for teachers, is trying to establish a new vision for the profession.
Yeah.
And to say that we're a valuable and valued members of society. But I didn't want to be a teacher. And when I left university, I won a scholarship to travel. And instead of just traveling around the world, I wanted to go and live somewhere and be part of a community. And, you know, just looking at a map, I picked the east, and Nepal was there, and I like mountains. I grew up in Kent, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's all very different.
Okay.
And found a charity that brought graduates working with, in that case, Nepalese graduates to go and work in villages and schools. And I realised, sitting in the sun, having taught in a secondary school and a primary school for a few months in eastern Nepal, that, you know, I could actually get paid for doing something that was so enjoyable. So I decided to come back to do my PGCE and worked here in Cambridge to do that.
Yeah.
And some of the people that inspired me, you know, Pam Bernard, who was one of my PhD supervisors, actually taught me as part of the PGCE course in 2001. And she's been part of my kind of professional learning journey throughout the time. When I did finish the PGCE, I went to East London and worked in a couple of schools there. The first class I had actually was the most complex and joyful experience I think I've ever had.
How so? What was?
Well, the class I inherited had five teachers the year before. So that class had no trust in any adults. And Angela Tapscott, who's a good friend who recently passed away and was my first head teacher, she said, just make sure you love them. Let them know that by Christmas time you love them so much that you're not going to go away. And it worked because after Christmas, we actually started learning something.
Okay.
You know, in terms of academic stuff. Mm. We'd learnt how to be a community in the classroom.
Right.
One of the things I learnt from her that I try to bring into my own practice now as a serving head teacher is that she opened doors for me. She kept finding opportunities that would keep me inspired and excited about learning and about working in a school. So she, you know, when I said I wanted to take a group of children to Spain, she said, well, okay, let's make it work. So she found funding. She, you know, we created projects. She allowed me, she trusted me to take children all the way to another country to do a creative arts project. She invited me to become an advanced skills teacher in the school. So I was able to work not only in the school, but also in partnership with others. Pam Bernard also, Angela said, you know, you need to do a master's. So I was excited about doing a master's. Pam Bernard then said, you need to do another master's and do it here at Cambridge. And then after that, you need to do a PhD because it's a kind of constantly learning. So I've been learning alongside being the teacher. Mm-hmm. And I think that has led me to be the head of a school that is about learning.
Okay.
And, you know, the University of Cambridge Primary School wants to be a centre of professional learning, as well as being a brilliant primary school for children.
What gives it this sort of university status if it's a primary school? What makes it different to another primary school besides just being attached to a university?
So when the government in 2010 decided to give the university, it granted the right to open a primary school as a university training school, the government didn't know what it meant by university training school. It allowed us to create that. So we really defined that in three ways. The first is to, and the most important thing is to be a brilliant primary school.
Okay.
The second is to be to support initial teacher education, so new teachers coming to the field. And we do that with the faculty and increasingly with others. And the third, which is where the unique selling point is to be a research-informed school, so principal our ideas on empirical evidence and research-generating. So we're still very young. We're just over 1,000 days old. Yeah. And so our main task is to set up a brilliant primary school for the children whom we serve and their families.
If I was to walk into the school, what would I see on an average day? I just walked in. How would things be different?
So as you walk to our school building, the first thing you'll see is a world map that really is a symbol of the inclusivity of our school, that we are a school that has children from all around the world, and that we celebrate diversities within the school. As you enter the main door, you'll enter the dining room, which is, you know, the heart of, you know, the kitchen and dining room are the heart of many people's family homes.
Yeah, of course.
It's the heart of our school. But you'd probably be struck that it's quite quiet and calm. And
it's not what I expect of a...
No.
No. But yeah.
And it's calm because that place there becomes lively at lunchtimes.
Yeah.
But all from that dining room are clusters where children are learning in their classrooms. Mm. And as you walk through to the first cluster, you'll be part of a learning street. You'll be in the learning street, which is our name for a slightly wider corridor. There are no doors on the classrooms, mm-hmm. and some people say that's a kind of gimmick from the 70s. But it is an intellectual decision because we want to be a trusting community in which people learn with each other, and children can learn across the learning street and go into different classrooms, and that teachers can step into each other's practice in a much more fluid way. But the learning street allows children to move into that space to learn independently, still be kind of monitored and checked that safety is fine. Yeah. So the building has a sense of trust and flexibility in it that I want to inspire my team as educators and the administrators who support us to make it, you know, what's into that kind of flexible possibility thinking is important. Mm. You'll see children independent. You'll see children lying on the floor. On laptops, working together, sometimes reading by themselves in a nook. Teachers will be engaged in small groups.
Yeah.
There'll be a sense of, I think the word that people often use is a sense of joy and a kind of positive, purposeful energy in this space. It's not rushing through education.
Mm-hmm.
It's about creating quality experiences that really provide in-depth kind of learning for children.
And I guess my thought when I'm thinking about that if there's so much going on, do kids pay attention? Like, are they totally engaged? Do they find it difficult with there's so many things, if there's learning streets and no doors, and do they find it difficult to concentrate? Or just thinking.
Well, because we have a real focus on kind of mindful practice.
Right.
For example, we start the day with children coming to the school, and they enter their classrooms, and we start with singing. So we sing for 10 minutes each day. You know, singing is good for you. There's lots of evidence that says it, you know, puts air in your lungs. It's community building. Mm. And then after the singing circle, the children have a meditation or a mindful session, which is about kind of 5-6 minutes. And then it's a sense of space making. We're coming together for this new day together as a community, and we're able to talk about the responsibility that we each have as individuals, but as a member of a community in a classroom, but also in a wider school, mm-hmm. and then at the wider community, and then mm-hmm. a global community. So there's the kind of talking and thinking about that with children. So because of that practice, I think the children and our values are very kind of strong in the way that we kind of work with children and manage children. The sense of empathy and trust and courage, courage to take risks. So children say, they're not allowed to say, I can't do it, unless they say yet at the end of it. I can't do it yet.
Interesting.
So children say, I can't do it yet.
You're definitely instilling grit there.
Sense of that. And it's not a false, it's not a false hope, because everyone can get better at it. You may not be kind of Pavarotti or, but everyone can learn how to sing. Everyone can improve their singing voice. Not everyone can be a Usain Bolt, but you can all learn how to run. Yeah. Though the children are still trying to encourage me to run better and faster.
Right.
So there's a sense of grit there in the ether. So that I don't think the children are distracted. I mean, children get distracted, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But the culture that we're trying to create, and that's where my real learning from my previous school is, how do you create the culture first? Mm. Because if you create the culture and you get the right people, then you, everything's possible, because we can learn together.
Yeah.
We can move beyond the difficulties together.
The involvement from all parties must be so high if joy is one of the key things at the school.
I mean, as you're saying that, my question is, why shouldn't it be joyful?
Yeah.
I mean, why shouldn't a school, shouldn't all schools be joyful? It seems obvious that joy in childhood is key, and joy and happiness. And with those factors in play, then children are more likely to want to be in school and more likely want to learn and feel safe to take risks.
Does this theme of risk-taking also spread to the staff?
Yeah, so in a climate where, there's a shortage of teachers, we initially started, recruiting teachers who had the academic qualifications and who were excited about, being researching teachers. Mm. But increasingly, as the years have gone on in our school, and we're only entering our fourth year, because the values, we have a values-led curriculum. The values of our school, the way we want to work, are really important for us. Mm. So we're recruiting people who can demonstrate that they have experiences where they've lived a certain set of values and can talk about those things, and they can explain how they've been resilient and overcome difficulties in their professional and personal lives.
Okay.
Or people who've shown empathy in practice, or who can feel there's a sense of trust that we could build, and trust is an important part of the school. So there are five values that are part of our curriculum. There are empathy, respect, trust, courage, and gratitude. Along all those things is a sense of humility. Okay. How do we get our egos out the way and say, well, what's going on for us and for our children, and how do we collectively find a way through for them? Mm.
So where do they sort of come from? Like, where does the sort of strategy at day one, well, obviously not day one of teaching, but day one of we're going to build the school, where do you sort of start getting the ideas from? Where does that sort of thought process come from?
Well, before I joined, Dame Alison Peacock and others at the university, they asked, the first question was, why should a university run a primary school? That was kind of an important question to ask.
It's a big one, yeah.
And then when that was worked out, that the university could be contributing with a tangible example of how education research can make a difference for one community, when that had been kind of worked through, and looking at the Cambridge Primary Review, which is the biggest piece of research in primary education for a number of years, the question was, what would the school be like? What would it look like? And so from this Mudfield and Northwest Cambridge ideas about the design, that we're looking again at research for Julia Barfield, whose company designed the London Eye. They're the architects of our school. They were very kind of intellectual about looking at research and looking at other examples, historical and current, to what a school would look like. But a school is not a building, and although we have a lovely building on the edge of Cambridge,
it's more about the ethos.
It's about the people within it. Yeah. Community is about people. Mm. When I was employed, I had to start articulating how the vision would translate into the realities of classroom experience. Having set up a school in East London with the Avanti Schools Trust, had an Eastern Hindu-based ethos. Mm-hmm. I learned so much from being in that school because the values were at the core of their curriculum. And I saw how living a set of values that became shared in a community could create the right environment and space in which children can learn well and which teachers have a chance to tinker with their practice, which is important. Hargreaves talks about tinkering with your practice. So teachers are allowed to take risks and play around with their ideas and practice to see how they can make it better.
So how does that work in practice, the idea of tinkering around but staying on point, staying within the curriculum? What flexibilities are teachers allowed?
The sense of being allowed to do something is not the kind of language we might use in our school. So,
encouraged.
Trust is an important feature. So we're all responsible. I have responsibility. Yeah. We all, in our own roles, have a responsibility to making it better for every child. Mm. And that's the kind of the how we talk about our practice in school. But an example of how we tinker with our practice is through an approach called lesson study, which is Pete Dudley from the Faculty of Education has researched significantly about lesson study. So, an example is I would plan a lesson as the head. Right. Some of my colleagues will then share that planning. They'll kind of add their ideas. I'm then going to teach the lesson with my colleagues watching me. And then after that lesson, we kind of unpick, we critique the lesson. So this is the sense that the head is being is risk-taking by being publicly saying, I'm going to give a go at this teaching, which I don't do every day as a head. It's no longer my lesson. It's about the practice. It's about what's going on in the learning between, that space between educator and child.
Yeah.
What's going on and how do we make it better? And so modelling that to my team means that others are more likely to take risks and to feel encouraged and excited about finding out what's possible.
If you've got this sort of sense of community, and you've got the community within the kids, and they're obviously enjoying what they're doing, and then you've got the enjoyment factor through the staff and the teachers and everything like that, you've got the third element of the parents, and how much involvement do they have with the school, or how much engagement do they have?
I think that out of all the members of our community, the parents were the most bold in taking the leap of faith in joining our school. When they first heard about the school, they saw me in a shed on a mud field on the edge of Cambridge, and a vision and the markings of a circular building, and they took that leap of faith to say that this is where they wanted their children to be educated. So they saw something different. They saw something in what we were trying to offer that was kind of a heartfelt and mindful approach to education. The fact that, an example of that is that we recruited last year a senior role called Mind, Body and Soul. So this member of staff is responsible for, developing philosophy for children in the school, the physicality of children and getting them to be having healthy lifestyles through active work. And kind of a notion of the sense of spirit, whatever that may mean for different people.
Yeah.
So that bringing everything together, bringing all aspects of being a human being together, rather than just focusing on rushing through to a curriculum to get results at the end of year six.
Yeah.
So we've always asked the question, what will our young people be like when they're 30 and when they're 20 and then when they're leaving primary school? And we need to be thinking that our responsibility is for the 30-year-olds as well as the one that the children now care, because I know there's a gap between primary school and being 30.
Yeah.
But if the evidence is true that the foundations of primary education set people up for positive lives and academic success later on, then we have a responsibility to ask those questions.
Yeah.
And we've done that several times, and with our families, with our kind of educating team, and with children. You know, what would it be like when we leave primary school, and what would it be like when we're older? And that's a sense of developing compassionate citizenship, not only for our community, but for the future communities that the children will go and live and serve. Yeah. And many of them will be leading their own communities.
I don't want to say mindfulness captain, but the person who's sort of responsible for creating all the activities and things. How do you sort of blend them in into the...
So we have a loose timetable, so because we have to manage, you know, covering people for lunchtimes and you know, there are structural things that you need to have in place. But as with the design of the building that is has a principle of flexibility and kind of trusting relations, you know, it's about nurturing trusting relationships within the building.
Yeah.
The fact that we don't have any doors means that, you know, no one can really hide. That it's about sharing practice. And you know, that was brought out in a very positive way in a recent inspection, that having nowhere to hide is actually a positive thing because we can learn better.
Yeah.
But the kind of flexibility of the curriculum is important, and the timetabling.
Yeah.
So for example, if a teacher really sees that children are loving writing poetry or writing stories or writing whatever it may be, why stop them after 40 minutes? Let them keep going.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I trust the teachers to do what's right for their children and to kind of document and manage their time across the week so that, you know, the curriculum is broadly covered.
Yeah.
But there's in-depth learning and there's quality experiences happening for children. We've heard anecdotes from parents saying that, you know, their children have said, oh, we're going upstairs to do a 5-minute mindful meditation.
Right.
And the parents are saying, I don't know what you're doing with our children, but it seems to be working.
Okay.
So... You know, they're very young children still, and we're only a very young school. But, you know, the way that the children behave is exemplary. I think they are very kind to each other. Obviously, things go wrong in a school. As I said, any human community, we make mistakes. And, you know, children are meant to make mistakes. That's the point of growing up and learning. And how do parents and teachers guide them through that mistake-making is... important part of the learning, as well as the academic aspect.
Of course. I know quite a few American universities have primary schools attached to them. Is the Cambridge University Primary School following a similar model to the American universities?
Well, we purposely didn't look to other places initially. Right. We had a blank canvas, so we wanted to say, well, what's right for the UK context? Politicians often go and visit other countries, and they cherry pick what they think is the best bit of that education system, and they kind of migrate it back to the UK. And it doesn't always work. You know, education is contextual. The Cambridge Primary Review talks about the community curriculum. You know, the schools should design their curriculum based on where they are.
Okay.
So we didn't want to go and look elsewhere initially. Obviously, now we're set up, we're going to want to learn. We wanted to say, well, what is our university training school for us in Cambridge with a specific kind of historic community being where we are? And initially, you know, as I said, we're only 3 years old. We're going to our fourth year. Our main responsibility was to make a brilliant primary school for children.
Right.
We are now in a position, having now established and embedding our work, we're now in a position to kind of realise what the university training school could be.
Okay, that's interesting. And
we're not an experiment on children.
Is how do you find that balance of you know using research obviously to formulate good practices, then trying to do sort of the next batch of practices by using the school, I guess. How do you strike that balance?
Well, it goes back to the notion of teachers as professionals who tinker with their practice.
Right.
You know, we talked about, you know, I think Andy Hargreaves talks about teachers tinkering with their practice is about research, you know, seeing yourself as a researcher. So one of my teachers is doing a master's at the moment, and her thesis is about how to improve boys' self-esteem through writing. You know, boys don't often like writing. nationally. And so she's exploring, you know, what's going on in her classroom, why some of the boys not doing as well as she wants them to do. That kind of looking at research, playing with your practice, trying to putting something in play, and see what happens, is one level of research. We're also working with colleagues at the faculty. So Dr. Fiona Main is lead researcher for a project about cultural literacies called Dials.
Okay.
We're going to be working with her in this project. There's a European-wide project that's looking at how do we improve cultural literacy, so children's awareness of diversity across Europe through literature, through wordless literature. So that's another example. So we are, you know, the teachers are learning alongside academics as they are researching what children are saying about text or visual, you know, visual text or multimedia.
Okay.
Rather than saying we're going to plug you in to a machine and see what your brain's doing when you're playing. We're not doing that kind of experimenting on children.
Okay. And then when you're taking the practices, how much time do you give that practice?
Well, it's important that ethically important that we can't fail children. We can't let them fail. That doesn't mean that teachers playing around with ideas and they're, you know, thinking differently about their practice. You know, if you don't give it a go, how do you know it may not work better?
Yeah.
You know, but we wouldn't obviously trial it for a year and then say, oh, it didn't work, and these children need now catch up for a year. That wouldn't be ethically appropriate. So we have a system. You know, there are structures in place within the school where we are, my leadership team and I, and within the community itself, are quality assuring our work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have quality assurance of my work, my practice. So it's about how do we, you know, high expectations and trust.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody is putting, role play into maths, for example.
Okay.
We will ask them to document their thinking and what's going on for children over a period of 3 or 4 weeks, and then review to see whether it works. But you need to give some time for things to say they're working or not.
Yeah.
Because it'll take time for children to adapt. It'll take time for other colleagues to adapt. But these aren't grand structural changes. These are, again, the idea of tinkering with the practice.
Yeah, of course.
When you tinker, you kind of nudge your way forward. You make a small dance steps towards a kind of bigger showpiece.
Bigger showpiece. Oh, I totally understand that. Because you give this sort of freedom to teachers as well. Have you found lots of ideas come from the teachers as well as from research?
Yeah, or the teachers who have read ideas or read something who will come to us and will come to, I say us, I mean the community, us as educators, not me as a head.
Yeah,
will come and say, well, this I've read this, I want to try this in my classroom, and is that okay? Is that okay to do that? So my job is and my leadership team's job is to question and to find where all the pitfalls will be.
Yeah,
possibly. And so that a person has thought about it in the most kind of intellectual way. So, for example, my year one team have said they want to make year one experience more like early years.
Right.
So they put together a paper that demonstrated what the research says about early learning.
Mm-hmm.
They put a list of furniture that they wanted because they wanted the space to be look different.
Right.
And they gave me a timeline and how they're going to make sure that the children's experience and the standards will always be high. So that's given the green light, and so they're going to go ahead with that. Now they have the responsibility to make it work.
Yeah.
That's where the trust comes in. That,
of course.
You know, they know that my job is to make sure that the quality is high. Their job is to make it happen.
That example of the year one to reception, did you say? Is that sort of something that you can visually see? Is that sort of just they're like working in groups, or is that?
I walked into the classroom this morning, and there are no more tables and chairs in the classrooms.
Okay.
There are a couple of tables, but there are only a couple. There's not enough for 30 children to sit at once.
Interesting. So it's got rid of the uniform sort of style of learning.
Yeah, and so the children, the space will enable children to be much more playful and much more like early years practice, where children are being taught on the carpet for short bursts of time, and then they are independently working on activities inside and outside.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I mean, just going back to the building, you spoke about, you know, what's special about the school. The building, although it's a lovely building on the edge of Cambridge and it's, you know, it's well designed, the principles could be applied to any school in any part of the country. So the idea that children could have access to outside learning, you know, even when I worked in a Victorian school in East London with three stories and I was on the top story, we were able to get outside because the head teacher said, get them outside more often. So even though we had to walk down the stairs, the principle of getting children outside is the one that could be applied anywhere.
Yeah.
The principle of independence, you know, finding space where children can be can learn without the intervention of teachers there all the time, is a principle that could be applied elsewhere.
And do you find, because you've talked about the sort of learning corridor and the sort of breakout sort of rooms, do you find that kids just navigate themselves toward those areas? Or is that...
The learning streets are... The learning streets are have different activities within them.
Right.
And there are spaces that are independent. So some of the activities are timetabled in. So, because otherwise you could have 180 children in one space, which is, you know, doesn't
chaos.
Quite work.
Yeah.
So they are, there are timetabled spaces within the curriculum called playful inquiry,
right,
where children are in and out doing different things, that they're expected to achieve those. You know, there's quite a high expectation. You can't just go and mess around outside, or you know.
Yeah, I just wondered. There needs to be this trust and freedom. Yeah.
I mean, I've walked around many times, and in the summer term, I really saw children completely focused. One example is that children were travel agents, and they just designed their travel brochures. In year one, these are 5-year-olds, travel brochures, and they convinced me which country I need to go to next through their kind of presentation to me. And then when I was outside, it was a lovely sunny afternoon, and they were they'd set up an aeroplane. The chairs were out. They were loading things onto the aeroplane. We're off.
Okay.
Now those children were completely engaged and in the space of being
travel agents,
being stewards and stewardesses,
yes,
pilots and,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
and passengers. So when I was talking to them, I wasn't talking to them as children. They were in those roles, and it was impossible to get them out of the role.
Okay.
You know, I tried to talk about other things. They were in it. So they're learning something, you know, and through play.
Yeah.
But they're learning about, you know, what it means to travel. They're learning about the sense of responsibility and you know, when there was a big problem in the aeroplane, they all had to get their jackets on, and they were you know, there's a sense of joy in the school that is that is lovely to be around, and very kind of privileged to lead that community.
Do those sort of ideas of joy and things like that come from your previous experiences of schools, or is it just, you know, something you've tried to instill in this school?
If you look on our website, my welcome page starts with "I love school" and I still love learning. And I think that's, you know, I found primary school and secondary school and university, I just loved it. Just enjoyed it. And so I think part of the reason why I'm a primary school teacher is that I want to continue this sense of joy in learning. Mm. Because, you know, learning can be great. You know, I've tried to keep learning myself. And so I think probably my own experience of being in primary school have influenced the joy that I want to create with my team in developing an experience for children in our school.
The involvement from all parties must be so high if joy is one of the key things at the school.
I mean, as you're saying that, my question is why shouldn't it be joyful?
Yeah.
I mean, why shouldn't a school, you know, shouldn't all schools be joyful? You know, it seems obvious that joy in childhood is key, and joy and happiness. And with those factors in play, then children are more likely to want to be in school and more likely want to learn and feel safe.
That's it from us at the We Are The University podcast. If you like what you're hearing, don't forget to head on over to the iTunes Store, or Spotify or Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and give us a 5-star rating. I'm Nick Suffell, and see you next week.